I could talk about a lot of things, but I'll try to keep focus on a few, and then maybe you will have questions about some of the other ones. I'll go over basically Venezuela history under Maduro, since I figure you probably know some about Chavez. And I'll go over some of the gains of the Venezuelan Revolution, why it's got such a reputation it has. And then I'll go into the U.S. sanctions and their effect on the Venezuelan economy. But first, in the beginning, we should remember that basically the whole Latin American progressive movement started when Chavez got elected in Venezuela back in 1998. Then it came Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, Bolivia, Ecuador, Honduras, and Chile even for a while had progressive governments. Became a wave of progressive anti-neoliberal governments. I mean, some were more anti-neoliberal than others, but they were in defending their national sovereignty. They took over these countries in Latin America. But it was led by Venezuela. And Venezuela became the main obstacle to U.S. hegemony in the Americas, and it became, Chavez quickly became a target for the U.S. overthrow. The defeat of the Chavistas now in Venezuela would also lead to a reactionary wave sweeping out throughout all Latin America, probably not only Latin America, but it would affect the United States too, and probably other countries in the world. I read an article a little while ago that compared Venezuela as like the 1930s Spanish Republic of today, which I think it is. If Venezuela fell, basically the whole progressive movement in Latin America would start to collapse. Bolivia would be in serious threat of being overthrown. Evo Morales, I guess the peace process in Colombia would probably start to end if it's not already ending. The right-wing governments in Argentina and Brazil would have more power than they do now and basically would reassert U.S. control over Latin America if the Chavistas in Venezuela were overthrown. Basically, the U.S. strategy now is to so ruin the Venezuelan economy that the people in Venezuela will vote out the Chavistas, which was basically their strategy they had with the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, to so ruin the Nicaraguan economy in the late 80s that people was like, well, if we vote for the opposition, maybe this terrible economic situation we're in will change. And so they voted out the Sandinistas. That's basically what the U.S. is trying to do in Venezuela now, or has been since Chavez died in 2013. As you might remember, Chavez became famous probably when he was the first world leader to hold up those photos of children in Afghanistan who got bombed by the U.S., remember, 2002, saying, "This is not how you fight terrorism." If you remember that, which immediately made him a target. And then their way, Venezuela later became famous because he was overthrown in April 2002, and then the people restored him to power, which is kind of unique in Latin American history. And the U.S., I mean, that government that the U.S. supported, that 48-hour government, got rid of the whole constitution and every single democratic form that existed in the country, and the U.S. celebrated it as a victory against dictatorship. Venezuela also became an example for a new fight for social justice and for socialism and from independence from the U.S. that not only affected Latin America, but Africa, the Middle East, Palestine, you know, there was... Chavez became a famous figure all over the world. Venezuela became, under Chavez, it became a deeply anti-imperialist and anti-neoliberal revolution with the aims of becoming a new kind of socialist society. It never really established a socialist society, but he at least gave new credibility to socialism as a way forward after the collapse of the Soviet Union and socialism was discredited for a period of time. Now, the U.S. has been trying to overthrow Venezuela for about 20 years. It was bogged down with the wars in the Middle East, so it wasn't able to do it. And then after Chavez died, they thought they had a better opportunity with Maduro taking over to try to crush the Chavista Venezuela. But they found that it was not as easy as it was in Chile when they overthrew Allende in 1973. One reason for that is, Allende never had a majority in the government. He was always a minority government. And the Chavistas, up till 2015, had a control of the National Assembly. And Allende never had control of the military, and the Venezuelan military was Chavista. Maybe it must be. There are some people who leave, who get arrested for treasonous acts or something, but basically it's 100% Chavista. So I guess another thing that Venezuela was known for that was famous was its communal movement it was trying to build, the communal society, a communal society based on cooperatives. I mean, that never really came out that well, but it became an inspiring example. So it became known for its anti-imperialist positions that Chavez took over and over against the United States. I guess I should mention his famous speech in the United Nations, which if you, I just watched that about a month ago. it was introduced by someone said that nobody had ever gone to United Nations and talked like that before. When he said the devil was here, I mean, you can watch it on YouTube, when he came and spoke the day after George Bush. Venezuela was also known under the period of Chavez, these programs still exist, for the social programs it's had, which you probably are aware of them to some extent, but I'll go over them a little. There are social missions where they basically, well, Venezuela also became famous for this because they took the oil wealth that the country had, and instead of it going to the wealthy elite like it does, say, in our country or in most countries or Saudi Arabia or so on, they used the oil wealth to go fund social programs for the poor. And with that, they started all these social missions which benefited the poor people, giving community health care, free community health care, housing, food, and education. They eliminated illiteracy. One of the more famous ones is Mission Barrio Adentro, which provided free health care to about 90% of the population in Venezuela, something that we don't have here, as you know. A lot of that with the help of Cuban doctors, thousands of Cuban doctors there that helped to get that program running. They had programs to eliminate hunger and illiteracy and homelessness, all these things that we see have been getting worse under the years that Chavista Venezuela is in power. It's been getting worse in this country. They have the Mission Robinson, which taught 1.7 million people how to read and write, their complete 6 years of elementary school. And they have their Mission Rebus, which provides high school education, where 800,000 people have graduated from high school from this program. And both of these programs have benefited 2.5 million Venezuelans, or 1 in 8 adults, which is a huge percent of the population. That's 1 in 8 adults is a lot of people to benefit from these educational programs. They also have a CANAIMA program, which provides computers to students. They've given out 5 million computers to students in Venezuela. They've opened up 33 public universities that have been built by the end of 2016, which offers free college education to students. They've also set up wireless, like 1,500 or maybe 2,000 wireless locations around the country where you get free internet. They've also started a subsidized food program called Mercal, and also One's called CLAPS that give very cheap food to 3 million homes every 2 weeks. They have the Gran Misión Vivienda Venezuela that has built 2 million homes for Venezuelans in the last few years, maybe 3 or 4 years. Which 2 million homes, there's population of Venezuela is like 31 million. So they've built 2 million homes for Venezuelan people in the last 3 or 4 years. That's even with the economic crisis they're in. And they're planning on building another 1 million homes. They've also had various pension programs for the old people and for housewives. One effect of this is they reduced poverty in Venezuela, which was at 71% in 1996, to 21% in 2010. Though now poverty level has gone up a lot because of the economic sanctions and the economic war going on. And extreme poverty had dropped from 17% to 5% in 2015. So basically they had cut poverty by two-thirds, while in the U.S. poverty has been increasing. They've also passed laws defending LGBT rights, transgender rights, indigenous and Afro-descendant rights. Women have played a greater role in Venezuelan society. So now 48% of the positions in the Venezuelan state are occupied by women. Probably the most famous one is Delcy Rodriguez. Have you ever heard her speak? She led the struggle against the OAS chief Almagro trying to sanction Venezuela, and she was pretty tough, pretty... She stood her ground and basically defeated them. 55% of the grassroots movements, such as communes and communal councils, are led by women. Venezuela has a maternity law where they have the third longest paid maternity leave in the world after Canada and Norway. Oh, I should say, since we're talking about a lot of U.S. propaganda about Venezuela, I forgot to mention back. A turning point in Venezuelan history was in 1989, which I guess maybe some of you know, but that was when there was a big, that was the year there was this big crackdown on social movements in China, remember? Everybody knows about Tiananmen Square and the people who got killed, which was, I don't know what it was, like 300? But in the same year in Venezuela, they had the same crackdown where the army just opened fire on the people after they led a revolt against the neoliberal measures with doubled prices overnight. And the military killed over 3,000 people. But all that was in February. Tiananmen Square was, as I remember, it was like March, April, May, June 4th. Everybody knew about Tiananmen Square, but you know the real slaughter that year went on in Venezuela, and that was not covered in the U.S. news, which is kind of how the U.S. has been dealing with Venezuela now and even back then. It's just another important thing that Venezuela did under Chavez period was he helped organize to ditch these Washington-backed institutions, such as the Organization of American States, the World Trade Organization, and the IMF. Chavez helped set up the UNISUR, which was the Union of South African Nations, which is a trading bloc between South American nations, independent of U.S. control. He helped organize a block of the like more progressive or left-wing governments and social movements in Latin America called ALBA, which is made up of the countries of Nicaragua, Venezuela, Cuba, Ecuador, Bolivia are the biggest ones. but it also includes a lot of social movements, progressive social movements. So it's like an international organization of progressive forces in Latin America. Chavez also fought to establish CELAC, which is the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States, which was to sideline the OAS by, it included all the Latin American states except for Canada and United States. Another important thing that Chavez did was create Telesur, which I don't know if any of you watch Telesur. You can watch it in TV in Spanish all the time, or it's the website. You can get news on Telesur in English also. You can get it on Facebook. It's a very good source of information. Sometimes I find it a little too positive about what's going on in Venezuela, but it's still a very good source of information. Venezuela is also known an example for what, you know, its aid to Palestine is called. It led for an international campaign to have no weapons sales or shipments to Israel. And they've sent all sorts of humanitarian shipments to Israel, especially starting after 2008 when Israel was slaughtering the people in Gaza and Obama was kept his mouth shut. And they've also set up special schools in Venezuela for Palestinian orphans. And they've given 1,000 Palestinian scholarships to study in Venezuela. But I'll go back now to the history, what the U.S. had been doing once Chavez died, which, since you're Venezuelan, I mean, some people think that Chavez was killed, but I don't have any evidence either way to say, so I won't. He died on March 5th, 2013. There was a vote in April for the new president. Maduro won by 1%. The U.S. was expecting that Maduro wouldn't win, but he did win. So the U.S. immediately said that the elections were fraudulent, and the opposition said the elections were fraudulent, and it started a bunch of violent protests in the streets, and 43 people were killed because of these protests. And in U.S. media, it's always, you know, the government killed all 43 of these people. Whether they did or not, I mean, I suppose some, but most of them were killed by opposition protesters, like putting wires across the street. So if you're riding a motorcycle, which a lot of people in these countries ride motorcycles, you go and it just takes your head right off. So in 2013, there was a lot of violent protests against Maduro, but they failed to have the effect that they wanted of unseating Maduro. In 2014, the price of oil dropped, which was the key to the Venezuelan economy. That's where they get 95% of their foreign exchange comes from oil. So that caused a big problem. It's been causing a problem for Venezuela since 2014. The U.S. started escalating its economic and media war against Venezuela more and more in 2014 and on. And the U.S. was pretty confident that its strategies would overturn the government. And it seemed pretty likely they were for a while. I know there's criticism of the Maduro government, but if you look at his history while he's been president, they have pretty effectively outmaneuvered the U.S. the whole time he's been president. They don't really solve their economic problems too well, but politically, they've outmaneuvered the U.S. government pretty well. And if I was going to skip ahead when the opposition won the National Assembly elections in 2015. People basically thought, well, this is the end of the Chavistas, that the opposition is now in control of the government and that they're going to impeach Maduro and that's it. But now this is 2 years after that, the opposition was completely discredited and in total disarray, and they stay in disarray. So, and the U.S. has, their options are more getting more and more militaristic. Venezuela, the government has been pretty effective in outmaneuvering the U.S. and the opposition. I think about 2014, I think it was, when Obama started putting sanctions on Venezuela. Is it 2014 or 15? When it became an extraordinary threat to our national security, and it still is today as we speak, in case you didn't know, because every year they renew it, that Venezuela is an extraordinary threat to our national security. And that's so they put sanctions on Venezuela because of that. I think Obama thought that he could have removed Maduro while he was still president. It gets a little reminiscent about how they thought they were going to remove Castro when every president thought, I got this guy. He's gonna be out in a year or so. And it's the same with Maduro. They can't. They think they got him, and they don't. When they won the National Assembly in 2015, they got almost 2/3 of the vote, which I think would have given them power to do whatever they wanted, the opposition. And then to get exactly 2/3, they swore in 3 delegates who had won by rigging and vote buying. And so this Supreme Court said that these people are, you got to run the elections over again. Or no, they didn't say, not the Supreme Court. The Electoral Council said there had to be new elections, and these people's results for them winning the election was not valid. And had to be new elections for these 3. But then the opposition went and swore them in as members of the National Assembly anyway. So then the Supreme Court said, well, any laws or things that the National Assembly passes while these people are still sitting, they're not going to be valid because these people are not supposed to be there. The opposition really didn't do much to solve their problem, and so they kind of wasted their time in the National Assembly not really doing anything, nor did they really plan to do anything. And they were just, they used their power in the National Assembly just to try to get rid of Maduro. They didn't do anything to solve the needs of the Venezuelan people. And as a result, the people who voted for the opposition got to see, well, these people got empowered and they don't do anything for us. So the opposition discredited themselves by that. Meanwhile, the economic war continued with hoarding and selling things. People would sell goods to in Colombia, and there was manipulation of the currency, which I could go into, but it's rather complicated, some of these economic things. But there's economic sabotage. Opposition groups destroyed the power grid for a period of time, and different periods of times. They killed public figures, policemen, firemen. And then this year, or last year, Trump got in. He started, I think, in March 2017. They had the plan with the U.S. government, the opposition, and the head of the OAS, Luis Almagro, the head of the OAS, to create a situation where they'd say there was a humanitarian crisis in Venezuela, and therefore, because there was that, the international community had to intervene to save the Venezuelan people who were suffering under this humanitarian crisis. And of course, they did all they could to create a humanitarian crisis by putting sanctions on Venezuela, blockading them from getting food and medicine, violence in the streets, killing people in the streets. I don't know if you've seen any videos of them where there was one pretty nasty one where they just stripped this black Chavista guy, poured a gasoline on him, and set him on fire in the video of him running down the street on fire while all these anti-Chavista people there celebrating. They did this not once, but at least a dozen times. There was all sorts of violence in the streets starting in March through July, which was just in conjunction with the OAS having hearings on declaring a humanitarian crisis in Venezuela. As soon as they opened the hearings, these violent protests started in Venezuela, as if, you know, by coincidence. And what the U.S. was trying to do was to get the OAS to pass a resolution saying there was a humanitarian crisis, and then the U.S. could intervene militarily through the OAS. So last year, about 120 people were killed, most of them by the opposition during these protests that went on all spring, summer. But the U.S., but Delcy Rodriguez, was able to block Almagro and the OAS from passing any humanitarian resolution, so they couldn't really do that, use that as a way to intervene in Venezuela. Then the U.S. tried going through the U.N. to do that, but then Venezuela went to the U.N. and countered the U.S. in the U.N., so the U.S. couldn't use the U.N. for that either. Then last summer, and in the spring of last year, Maduro called for a constituent assembly on a May Day. And the U.S. and the opposition went all out to block the vote for a constituent assembly. The opposition even had a vote on July 16th calling on the Venezuelan people to vote no towards a constituent assembly. So they did have a vote on July 16th, and the opposition said 7 million people voted, and 7 million people voted to say, no, we don't want a constituent assembly. And as soon as the vote was over, burned all the ballots. So you couldn't see how many people actually voted and in what way they voted. Did they vote yes or no? It's like they burned all the ballots. But it was a legitimate election in the U.S. media, saying that the Venezuelan people had rejected the Constituent Assembly, and this Constituent Assembly was some authoritarian, dictatorial move by Maduro, and it was rejected by the Venezuelan people in this vote, and this is a humanitarian tragedy, and we have to do something to save the Venezuelan people. But so then, after that, the opposition had what they called zero hour, and they had called for a general strike before the Constituent Assembly vote was going to take place, which was July 30th, but that general strike flopped. And then there was the Constituent Assembly vote, which was open to anybody who wanted to run could run. So there was like 5,000 people running for 545 seats. But all the opposition people didn't participate in this because they all, you know, this is dictatorship, so we're not going to participate. So the Chavistas just won the whole Constituent Assembly, and the Constituent Assembly became the highest power in the country. By doing what the opposition doing that, they made a major miscalculation because they just gave all the power back to the Chavistas. And then the National Assembly became unimportant because the Constituent Assembly could overrule anybody. Then right after the Constituent Assembly vote took place, all the violent protests ended. Which I don't know if you saw all the violent protests in Honduras, I guess, this year. This is probably when I was thinking about that when I wrote some article criticizing Eva Gallinger about what she was saying about it. I said that there was violent social unrest in the country like we would see like in Honduras, but the government did not put down these violent protests by calling out the military or calling out the police and smashing people's heads and shooting people. What he did, he didn't use death squads against his political opponents, Maduro. He didn't jail or torture the opposition. He had called for a constituent assembly, and they had got mass support, and then all the violence died down. saw the Constituent Assembly basically ended all the violent social unrest in the country and restored social peace and put the end to the, you know, the U.S. was trying to create more and more violence to create a civil war situation and then say, well, we have to intervene to save the people. So what Maduro did with the Constituent Assembly after it was the vote came was basically it was like probably one of the most humanitarian times in, I suppose you could say, in any history that I would know, that a government faced with violent social unrest has ended the social rest by calling for a democratic vote. And there was a democratic vote, and then after that, the unrest ended. They didn't, I don't think of any other time, I can't think of any other country where something like that has happened. But that doesn't stop the U.S. from saying it wasn't a democratic vote. But basically, like the opposition, they say every vote in Venezuela is not democratic. They only had one democratic vote, and that was when the opposition won the National Assembly. There is some violence that still resurfaces now, such as that bizarre attack by that guy who was a low-level person in the military who got a helicopter and flew over the Supreme Court building and some other buildings and threw hand grenades at him, which he was not condemned as a terrorist by the U.S. or other U.S.-backed organs for. Well, you'd think if you throw hand grenades at Supreme Court building, you might be considered a terrorist, but not here. So then in the fall, there were elections on April 15th for governors, and the opposition wouldn't participate in those elections. But some opposition people did, and the result was that the Chavistas basically, they swept the elections. There's 23 governor positions, and they won 18 of them. And then in November or December, there were votes for mayor, with 335 mayoralties were open for up for re-election, and the Chavistas won 308 of them. So the opposition, they go from running in elections to saying elections are, they're fraudulent, and then they don't participate, and then the Chavistas win all the elections. And so they get, and then sometimes the opposition runs in elections, so it's confusing to their base because they'll tell the people to go vote for the opposition, and then next they'll tell them, no, all these votes are fake, so don't vote. And then they'll say again, no, we go vote and vote for us. And then they'll say, no, all the elections are fake. Don't vote. Just go out in the streets and protest. I guess the most interesting one is going to be there's going to be presidential elections in May. There was mediation agreements with the government, the Maduro government and the opposition, to make an agreement about elections in April, and they had basically reached an agreement that the Maduro would run and the opposition would run for president and the people would vote and that would decide everything. And then, and this was with sponsored by the president of Dominican Republic and what other presidents? Oh, backed by the Pope. And basically, they had reached an agreement, and they were going to sign an agreement, and it was an hour and a half before they were going to sign the agreement. When Tillerson was in Colombia, they got a phone call from some place in Colombia telling them, don't sign the agreement. And so they didn't sign the agreement. So that was the end of this mediation talks. The U.S. intervened to make sure it didn't happen. Then the opposition went and called for a boycott of the elections because they said the elections would be fraudulent, as they always do, and the elections are not legitimate. But then one opposition person called Henry Falcon decided to run for president, and he was immediately kicked out of the opposition because he said he was going to run. And he also was threatened with getting sanctions for the U.S. because he was going to run. It's a little interesting if I read some of the U.S. statements about elections. Before the December 15th elections, the opposition won, the U.S. had said, the question is not whether the election will be free and fair. It's already been established it won't be. What's unclear is whether Maduro will resort to outright fraud or violence to prevent an opposition victory. That was 2 weeks before the opposition won those elections. So then the U.S. is like, these are free and fair elections. Now, last spring, the U.S. was calling for elections all the time in Venezuela, presidential elections, saying President Maduro should hold elections as soon as possible. His statements from the U.S. government, March 29th last year. March 30th, they said, we call for the government of Venezuela to hold elections as soon as possible. April 10th, we echo the Venezuelan people's calls for prompt elections. April 18th, we call on the government of Venezuela to hold prompt elections. And on May 2nd, they say it's the Venezuelan people who should decide Venezuela's future, which is why we once again call on Venezuelan authorities to promptly hold free, fair, and transparent elections. On May 30th, when people are asking for today, which is for national presidential elections to restore legitimacy to whoever might rule Venezuela moving forward. And it goes on and on from May through June. And now that they are having presidential elections, the U.S. says, no, we don't want presidential elections in Venezuela. This is a dictatorial move by the government. The U.S. is doing that because they know the opposition is not going to win. That's the only reason. Well, they might win, but I don't... The U.S. doesn't think the opposition is going to win, and so they're trying to discredit these May elections even before they take place. And so is the opposition, saying that the elections are fraudulent and they can't trust the government. So then the Venezuelan government is going to the U.N. to ask for U.N. observers to watch the elections in May, and the U.S. government and the opposition is trying to stop the U.N. from doing it. Because they know the UN is going to say that these elections are fair, and the US knows that. I'll go a little bit on the economy. Like I said before, almost 95% of the foreign exchange of Venezuela generates comes from oil, and 98% of foreign exchange comes from the state sector. But nevertheless, the government has been giving billions of dollars to private business to import food and other materials. For many years, they've been doing this. And for many years, these private businesses have just been... the Venezuelan government gives foreign private companies in Venezuela discounted U.S. dollars to import food or spare parts or whatever they want to import. So if I go back to maybe 4 years ago or 3 years ago, it might be the Bolivar was like 300 to a dollar, but these companies would get, for 10 Bolivars, they get a dollar. So they got a very good deal. But they did not use this money to import food and other things. They either just took the money and resold the dollars in the black market, making a killing, because, I pay 10 bolivars, I get a dollar. So I go in the black market, and I sell it, and I get 300 bolivars. That's a better deal than importing something and getting a little profit. Or they would import stuff and then sell it to Colombia. And this went on for years and years. And I can't really explain why the Venezuelan government continued to do that, but they did that for many years, which helped ruin their economic system there, created very high inflation. It's so high right now. It's like I went there in 2015 for the December elections, and it was in the black market. $1 was 8 bolivars. But if I used If I change my dollar into bolivars like that, I mean, I go to McDonald's, I could buy a meal for like $1.15. So it's like, I could go in grocery stores and after I change my money in the black market, I could buy stuff I see in the U.S. grocery stores like 40, 50% off of what I see over there, what I'd see here. That's when it was 800 bolivars to a dollar. Now it's 235,000 bolivars to a dollar. But as I asked people there, I'd say, well, you could still, if you had $50, you could live pretty well here for a month. It's like same as 3 years ago. You wouldn't really need, you wouldn't suffer for anything. But if you don't have dollars, then you're really suffering. Private interests still control most of the country. 75% of the financial sector is in private hands. 92% of manufacturing is in private hands. 70% of the food production and distribution is in private hands. 70% of the media is in private hands. This comes from the BBC. Majority of the land remains in private hands. It's still a private economy. They haven't really done anything to end private control of production or distribution of goods. And even though you have cooperatives there, the cooperatives, if they're going to sell their goods, they still go to get controlled by private businessmen. So it's not really like cooperatives are a solution, because if they don't control distribution, it's still in the hands of capitalists, doesn't really solve that much. People are angry at the government because of the economic situation, and they don't really feel that the government's doing enough to solve the problem. And not only that, I don't think the government is doing a good job of explaining to the people what's the cause of the economic problems. And since I'm going to run late, I'll go into some of the sanctions right now that the U.S. is imposing. Seems a lot of the sanctions the U.S. is imposing, it looks like it's on individuals, but it's not really, because a lot of the individuals are the people who sign contracts. So if you want to sign any international business contracts with Venezuelans, you can't sign it with them because there's sanctions on these people. Even like Citgo right now cannot send funds to Venezuela. The country is not able to renegotiate its debt. It cannot use dollars in any kind of international transactions, which, I mean, almost all international transactions are in dollars. It's not only the U.S., but it's the European Union and Britain and Canada that have put in sanctions. The country has $2.5 billion stuck in foreign banks that it cannot take out. The country is said to be in default, even though it has paid $73 billion in loans over the last 4 or 5 years, and it's not defaulted on any loans. The U.S. has blocked food shipments to Venezuela because, you know, they order food overseas. A lot of foreign banks won't process the transactions because of the sanctions, and they don't want to get in trouble with the U.S. over the international the sanctions. And they can't even, when in last fall, when Venezuela was going to have a meeting to kind of refinance its debt, the U.S. government said it was illegal for any U.S. people to meet with them, and that it was a possible 10-year prison sentence or, I don't know, $1 million fine for some U.S. person to make any agreements with the Venezuelan government about renegotiating the debt. The U.S. has also blocked things like insulin and malaria drugs from coming to Venezuela. In fact, the U.N. rapporteur for who went to Venezuela last December, Alfred de Zayas, said that Venezuela should take the U.S. to an international criminal court for its sanctions because it violates the human rights of the Venezuelan people. And it's basically causing the death of Venezuelan people. People who need malaria or the other kind of drugs, they can't get it because of the sanctions. The sanctions are getting worse, and they're going to continue to get worse. And with Bolton in the U.S. government now, I'm sure it's going to get worse. If you know Bolton, the guy, I forget what his position is. I knew him when I was doing work around Cuba. He was the one in 2002, before Bush invaded Iraq, he was the one that said that these scientific medical facilities in Cuba were creating biological weapons to be used against us, and we need to do something about it. That's when Jimmy Carter went to Cuba and said, no, they're actually just making medicine. Since there is some question about, you know, Maduro is not following in the footsteps of Chavez, I will just go into a little. The Chavez was awfully soft on the opposition. It's like they did overthrow him in 2002. That's treason, right? A lot of countries, you get shot for that. Yeah, Leopoldo Lopez and Enrique Capriles, who were elected officials later, they were involved in that coup. A lot of these people in the opposition now were involved in that coup. They should have been, he just let them all go, which is kind of crazy. I mean, they make a coup against you, you get rid of the coup, and then you let them go. Like, let's be friends. That they don't work like that. It's like, okay, well, we'll just keep trying again. And that's what they did over and over. He was pretty lenient with going after opposition people, which Maduro is not. He's still, I think, kind of lenient, but he's not as lenient as Chavez. Maduro has been more active in getting these people's communes, communal production working. He's created more, helped set up more these communal systems than Chavez did, which I guess I won't give time to get into that. Chavez did very little to diversify the economy. I can't really blame him, but, you know, Maduro inherited that the whole economy was based on oil, and the price of oil collapsed under Maduro. That the rich elite still have decisive economic control in Venezuela, and that's a problem. They don't have political power, but they have decisive economic control. Now, Washington is continuing going to escalate its war in Venezuela. It is dead set against letting Maduro win the election in May. I don't know what it's going to do, but it's not going to just do nothing. It's going to escalate the situation. I don't know if they're going to militarily intervene or what, but they're just not going to let Maduro get elected president for another 6 years. Maybe they'll embargo Venezuelan oil, which provides 1/4 of U.S. oil. One key thing that they have to do, and they have been doing for several years, is to completely misrepresent the situation in Venezuela so people think it's not worth defending that government or that country because they're so screwed up. It's like, you know, it's their fault they're in that mess. So we shouldn't bother defending them. It's sort of what they do with Russia. It's what they do with Syria. It's like they make them like, you're totally out of bounds if you want to say anything good about these people. So don't even try to defend them. Now, finally, I'd want to say that if you want to get more information, we have this AFGJ Venezuela Weekly that I've been doing for the last 2.5-3 years. You can sign up on the Alliance for Global Justice website that has news of what's going on in Venezuela and the U.S. campaign against Venezuela. And we'll have Dan Kovalik coming next week, speak Monday night at the Workers United Hall, comparing Venezuela and Colombia. And also he'd written a book called The Plot to Scapegoat Russia, which he'll be talking about a little. And we'll be having, we have monthly Venezuela webinars, the Alliance for Global Justice. And next week's will be about the big International Solidarity Conference that just took place in Venezuela on March 5th. But all those will be on you could sign up on the Alliance for Global Justice website, you can get that information.